Good morning. It's 9 minutes after 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'm here this week for Joy Cardine. This hour, we're going to be talking about John McCain's run for the White House. He's had the Republican attention pretty much focused on himself lately, and here he is joking about it on Saturday Night Live last weekend.
Democrats, I have to urge you, do not, under any circumstances, pick a candidate too soon. Imagine the excitement of leaving the convention and still not knowing who to nominate. That would be crazy. Crazy exciting.
But now all of that attention is leading to some issues being raised about the McCain campaign. Lobbyist issues, for example, relationships with pastors who support him, whether he can unite the Republican Party, and much, much more. And this morning, I see, we've got some questions also about who his vice presidential choice might be as well. So we've got lots to talk about in terms of the McCain campaign this hour, and our guest to help us through it is Susan McManus, a professor of political science at the University of South Florida. She'll be taking us through those issues and answering your questions, too. You can join in at 800-642-1234. In Madison, it is 263-1890, or you can join us by email, and that address is talk@wpr.org. Susan McManus, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you along. First question I have for you today is the big broad question. What is the general state of the McCain campaign?
Well, obviously, it's at not as near the high visibility as the Democratic campaign.
Yeah.
And, of course, all three of them went our state yesterday. So, but anyway, he's spending this time really honing his message, trying to get the fundraising machine back in gear to the level that it was for Republican candidates in Bush in 2004, and, you know, trying to get organizational networks set up in a lot of the key swing states. And trying to get airtime, frankly.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to do because there's this whole other race going on that's getting all the attention.
Absolutely.
And how's he been doing on that? I mean, it's been a struggle for him. What's he been trying to do to try to get his name to rise above the fray?
He's been very strategic in the states that he goes to and the states that he does get news coverage in. And, he's worked the talk shows, the popular ones, mm-hmm. as well as the more cable news ideological focused, to put it nicely, cable shows. But it's been tough for him because so much of the media attention is on the other side of the aisle where, you know, either candidate proves to be what we would say is a path-breaking candidacy, either gender or race. And, of course, he could say age, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And he said it, yeah, a couple of times.
But,
anyway.
It's tough when your race is already over. And so for all those who are arguing that the extended Democratic campaign is terrible and divisive, et cetera. The good news is that the candidates have been kept in the news, and Democrats are registering record numbers of people in Florida alone. The gap between Democrats and Republicans and registrants has widened to 5%. It was 3% at one time with Democrats holding the edge. So, you know, the protracted campaign has had its assets as well as some projected liabilities in terms of Clinton supporters not willing to support Obama, et cetera. But McCain hasn't had a foil out there, hasn't had anything to really call his attention to his campaign, other than the fact that now suddenly Obama, believing he's got the nomination in the bag, is suddenly, you know, talking about McCain on all of his stump speeches.
And conversely, John McCain also taking on Obama on national security issues and things like that. So he is sort of almost making Obama, in a sense, the presumptive nominee.
That is correct. And he's tried to brand Obama. And, of course, the converse is true there as well. But I think that the press, in some ways, is very anxious to move to the next stage of the campaign, where it's basically the two candidates that will be opposing each other in the general election. But until that happens, McCain does have trouble with getting media. But the asset there is he has time to hone messages, carefully study focus group reports and polls and meet with people, strategists, that he wouldn't have as much time to do if he were just on the stump 24/7.
And let's talk about those messages real quick. When you say he's honing his message, and that's been coming up here, I mean, did he start out in one place when he was one of many Republicans, and now he's got to go somewhere else in terms of his message now that he is the presumptive nominee?
Not so much going someplace else as broadening his message to include not just security policy, but a wide array of domestic policy issues, because it does look like that this is an economics-based election, at least at the moment. You never say that that's where it'll end up because things change so fast in politics, but he's really had to get positions on a wide number of domestic policies.
We're talking with Susan McManus this hour, a professor of political science at the University of South Florida, and we're discussing the campaign of John McCain, the presumptive Republican nominee for the White House, and where his campaign has been going lately. As we've mentioned, he's had it pretty much to himself, which has been good and bad. Hasn't gotten the attention that he might like, but it is giving him the opportunity to refine his message and to figure out how he wants to present that as the campaign gets underway in earnest over the summer and then into the fall. We have some open lines for you if you'd like to join in. Here they are, 800-642-1234 is our toll-free number. If you're calling from the Madison area, it is 263-1890. What do you think of John McCain and his run for the White House? What do you think his chances are in terms of running against the Democrats? And how do you think he is doing in terms of honing that message of letting the electorate know who he is? There are a lot of Republicans who are very curious about as to who John McCain is. What do you think? 800-642-1234. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm in for Joy Cardine this morning here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 17 minutes past 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm filling in today for Joy Cardine. Susan McManus is our guest this hour. She is a professor of political science at the University of South Florida, and we are talking about John McCain and his campaign for the White House. We spent this hour yesterday talking about what's happening in the Democratic primary, and so today we're finding out what's happening on the Republican side. Let's go to phones right now, and Steve is with us from Waupaca. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Like a year ago when McCain first got into the race, I thought he was almost the polar opposite of Bush. As far as much as a Republican could be. But now I feel he's, whether he's had to because of the party or whatever, he's looking like he would be 4 more years of Bush if he won the election. And at one time I would have considered voting for him over Clinton, but now I don't think I could. And now I find it a little bit interesting in the last couple of days is the whole flap with the lobbyists that work for him, and now he take their money, but now they're going to be fired off of his staff and all that. So That's my comment.
All right, Steve, thanks for the call. And Susan McManus, a couple of issues there. The first, he is following George Bush in the Republican trail here. And how closely does he want to tie himself to that president?
Well, obviously the Republican Party has divisions as well as the Democrats. And McCain has spent some time trying to repair his position within the conservative Republican ranks, and not so much, I might add, on social issues, but more on fiscal issues. And in doing so, he has looked a lot more like President Bush. But that's going to be essential for him to keep, especially on fiscal matters, restoring of the tax cuts, all that kind of thing. He's got to do that because he will lose a lot of Republicans who simply will not vote, or will cross over and perhaps vote for the Libertarian candidate. But he's really got a tough row to hoe because he's trying to distance himself from Bush, but at the same time, he's got to appeal to Republicans on Republican concerns, and that's just almost it's a very difficult position. And already Obama has started successfully using the commentary, which Steve reflected, is that, you know, that it's McCain-Bush 4 more years. And The branding that Obama's doing on that front makes it very difficult for McCain, who's tried to separate but has to join at the same time. It's a tough, tough thing. thing to accomplish, and he's struggling with it.
And it is tough. And do you have any sense of how well it is working, or how well it's playing with Republicans who may be on that fence?
There's still not a great embracing of McCain on the part of the more conservative Republicans. They've never really trusted him because he's been a maverick. Ironically, the thing that's very appealing about him, his maverick status in the past, is not something that appeals to the base of the Republican Party necessarily. But that said, very much like on the Democratic side, probably no matter which of the candidates you are favoring, you ultimately will, if you are a primary voter, probably come home and vote for your candidate. The same will probably happen on the Republican side. But I think right now being very harmful to McCain that so many of the Republican conservative mouthpieces are really kind of dissing him on many of their programs.
Mm-hmm.
It's not helpful to him.
Yeah, and dissing him would be a kind way to put it.
I was trying to be polite.
And we appreciate that. Steve also brought up another issue, I don't know what else to call it, the lobbyist issue, I guess. All these folks who've been working on John McCain's campaign who are lobbyists accepting money for one thing or another, all of a sudden they're sort of leaving in droves.
That's true, but you know, there has to be a caution light blinking there for Obama on that front because he's very careful to word that he doesn't take money from federal lobbyists, but he has plenty of state lobbyists that are contributing to his coffers. And there's also another side to this, that even though people who listen to your program and more attentive people who are very passionate about politics care a lot about the lobbying thing, for the average person, polls kind of suggest that people just think that's politics as usual, and it's not going to be nearly the factor in someone choosing a candidate as the issues and character and experience and all those other kinds of intangibles.
Let's go back to the phones right now, and Steve is with us from Superior. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Real briefly, I think McCain is being handed a gift by the Obama campaign that if Obama wins, it looks like a Republican that a lot of Republicans don't want could become the president very easily. I cited a poll yesterday on one of the major networks that showed that 30% of the people, top of the poll, believe that Obama will not be the candidate of the Democratic Party this year. And I was, like, floored, but I'm thinking maybe there's hesitation in the Democratic Party as to Obama's candidacy because it looks like he would make McCain a shoo-in.
Susan McManus?
Well, those polls are very difficult to interpret because, first of all, they're done in the heat of primary and in the heat of intensity where Democrats are choosing sides, and they've had two very clear choices between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. So the 30% figure there about not voting for him, it is troubling, no question about it. But I thought that Steve was going with the gift that keeps on giving was mm-hmm. some of the spillover from the sort of underground campaign about, well, not so underground, the Reverend Wright and the flag lapel pin and things like that. While, again, more attentive people may not think those things matter, to average people, they do. And they have been showing up as being significant, even in the exit polls of Democrats, as concerns. So, I don't know that just that 30% figure is enough to say that it'll make McCain a shoo-in.
And you mentioned the Reverend Wright there, and John McCain has had, I don't know what else to call this, but pastor troubles of his own in Ohio, as I recall. And they haven't gotten nearly the attention that was focused on Reverend Wright and the Obama campaign.
Yes, and a lot of the analysts that have looked at that issue have, I think, attributed the differential to the fact that the 20-year figure. And in politics, sometimes pieces of information get ingrained in voters' minds that stick with them, and the 20 years of sitting in Reverend Wright's congregation is something that people on the street do remember. And, you know, one of the things that people have pointed to that was one of the few missteps of the Obama campaign was to let that story linger over a weekend before the Obama campaign addressed it. And it's no longer the case that weekends are dead news periods. That used to be the assumption, but that's certainly no longer the case with 24/7 cable and internet, which is where more and more people now are going for news. So that I think that's the difference, is that Obama willfully sat in the congregation for 20 years.
Let's go back to the phones, and Bruce is with us from Jefferson. Good morning, Bruce.
I gotta respond to that last comment. That is just over the top. It's the reason basically boils down to the point I want to make. The reason was for the Hagee versus the Reverend Wright thing. McCain would be dead in the water. The only guy who's covering McCain is Keith Olbermann on MSNBC, and he's been showing that McCain is running against McCain. McCain's old positions, new positions, 180 off. But the reality is McCain would be dead in the water except for two major advantages all Republicans have at this point in the game. Number one, they own the media. Corporations own are very friendly to Republicans. Case in point, the other day MSNBC was running Vito Fuseli, the New York congressman who apparently had two wives, as a Democrat when he is a Republican. And the second thing is one-third of voters still vote in this country on machines which have no paper ballots. So because of those two facts, you can't count the Republicans out. And that's my point. Thank you.
Bruce, thanks for the call. And Susan McManus, a couple of points there. And Bruce's first point on the media, there you hear that a lot from, particularly in talk radio, that the Republicans tend to control things and control a lot of coverage. At the same time, you tell us that John McCain is fighting for every minute he can get.
Well, the distinction is the kind of media, and that's one of the really fascinating things that have changed so much in American politics is the proliferation and diversification of media. Because if you look at groups who study the media's coverage, and they particularly focus on broadcast television and some of your key national papers, they have concluded overwhelmingly so far that the Democratic candidates have gotten a lot more positive coverage than has McCain. But on the other hand, if you look at talk radio and some of the cable outlets, which are now very ideologically distinct, I mean, certainly people who listen to MSNBC or CNN are very different than those who listen to Fox News, but talk radio and Fox News, then you say, well, yes, the media has some kind of bias, but that's what's very interesting, is increasingly Americans are choosing the media that they wish to go to based upon perceived ideological differences or makeup or dispositions of that medium.
And that is a big difference, because they're just hearing it's hard to learn new things.
Yes, exactly. You no longer have the overarching media that can reach all of the population. That used to be the case when you just had the three major television networks and cable was non-existent, and where you didn't have the internet, then you had a lot of similarities, a lot of being able to reach the entire American electorate. Now you can't, because even a more dramatic fact is the percentage based on age who don't watch the evening broadcast national news programs. That younger people, for example, aren't home then. Very few of them watch it, and it's so different. So the whole way of using the media to campaign has, again, been one of the factors that contributes to the rising costs of campaigns. You've got to have media specialists for internet, media specialists for cable, for
and we've
broadcast.
I'm afraid we've got to take a break here, Susan McManus, but we will return and we'll pick up that point.
Okie dokie.
This is the Ideas Network. Good morning. 25 minutes now before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in today for Joy Cardine. Susan McManus is with us this hour, a professor of political science at the University of South Florida, and we are talking about the campaign of John McCain. And before the break, Susan McManus, we were talking about the way the media are now in terms of the 24/7 operation, and we had a comment from a listener who was concerned that John McCain has an in because he's a Republican, and it was his contention that Republicans own the media.
And I think we had also pointed out that analyses that show coverage and direction of coverage really have found that the media, as they call the mainstream media, has mm-hmm. been kinder. The more traditional media, I think, is a better term, kinder to Democratic candidates than to Republicans. So it just depends on which media outlet you're listening to, reading, or watching.
He also brought up the issue, which I hadn't heard for a while, the voting machine issue. There's discussion about how reliable the machines are, whether they count the votes, who's controlling them, and so forth. And do you expect this to turn into a larger issue during this campaign?
I don't know that I do, because in some of the key states where it's been a problem, they've tried to address it. For example, Florida, we no longer have the touchscreen voting machines. We have optical scans. And some of the other states where the issue of electronic machines has come up, they've tried to address it either through changing equipment or adding safeguards. But it will always be a concern as long as you don't have a paper trail. And, you know, that's just the bottom line. So if there are states that end up being swing states that are very close and those kinds of machines are used, you know, don't ever count out a recount issue or a problem with those kinds of machines.
800-642-1234 is our toll-free number. And if you're calling from the Madison area, it is 263-1890. Robert is with us now from Kenosha. And good morning, Robert.
Good morning. I actually had a question, and I know that it could get a response.
Okay.
And I'm hoping to get a response from your guest. The question is, what effect and how does McCain use the race issue? Because it's a winner-take-all situation, if you have 5%, just 5% of the people who would normally vote Democrat but aren't ready to vote for a black or an African-American as president, how does McCain use that issue without getting a backlash?
All right, Susan McManus, there it is, a question I think a lot of people might be asking themselves.
Well, first of all, he's not going to use the race issue. In those kinds of cases, people who are going to take that kind of avenue of racially biased voting are going to do it regardless of whether he says anything or not. That's just going to be the way it is, and no candidate is going to affect that. And McCain certainly doesn't want to embrace racism. One of the things that's quite interesting about the racially polarized voting that a lot of people have observed in exit polls and whatever, some of that is attributable. There's an intersection between race and age. And so that's caused some people to talk about, well, older voters are less likely to vote for an African-American candidate, so that must mean that that's where the racism is coming from. But then there's another viewpoint about older voters that's just now starting to be articulated, which I believe that in a diverse state like Florida, is more of an explanation for these patterns. When you think about the FDR generation elderly, they've been through two major shocking experiences in their life that most of us who are younger have not. They've been through a depression, and they've been through a major world war like we've not seen since. And in situations like that, older voters tend to want experience, which is why they're leaning more towards McCain. It really has far less to do with racially motivated voting. It has much more to do with the fact that a large portion of the older voters are more Anglo than younger voters, for example.
Let's go to Art, and Art is with us from Green Bay. Good morning.
Well, good morning. I think McCain's going to have to overcome the age issue. I think also, though, he can use that to his advantage. And what's interesting is you mentioned that the older voters are more Anglo, but the younger voters are more likely to vote for a black. And it's kind of funny that if white people won't support a black candidate, then that's racist. But if all the black voters in an area are going to vote for one particular candidate because he's black, that's not racist. And it just seems kind of funny to me that it is portrayed that way. But the other thing that is interesting regarding the media you mentioned before is that I think every year they have a survey as to, you know, how reporters identify themselves, Republican or Democrat or independent. The independents usually make up about, you know, 2 or 3%. Republicans make up in the neighborhood of 5 to 7% in that range, and so the reporters that identify themselves as Democrats outnumber the rest by about 9 to 1, I think it is. And you know, if you watch the news in the evening, you find the problem with the evening news that you mentioned before. No, there's no overreaching or overarching source of news. You get 22 minutes of news every evening because there's about 8 minutes of commercials packed into that half hour. And then you...
All right. I don't know what happened to Art's phone, but it went away. Susan McManus, his first point is the one I want to touch on first, and that had to do with age. You were talking about how many voters will perceive John McCain's age and experience as being assets. But a lot of people are going to flip that around and say, you know, he is just a little too old, and we wonder what's going to happen in 4 years.
And that's exactly why the age issue is very interesting, but it's exactly why many are saying now that the choice of McCain's vice presidential running mate is probably the most critical decision that he's going to have to make in his campaign. But that said, the other dimension is that Americans are living a lot longer, and really, you know, to the boomers, 72 doesn't really seem that old. To the under 30, it seems like prehistoric, to put it a little bit in college student terms. But, you know, the age issue, he's doing the best he can with it, he, McCain, in combating it and laughing about it and talking about how long his mother's lived and she's in perfect health and trying to downplay it as an issue, which that's the best he can do right now on the issue. Because just like some people vote on the basis of race, some vote on the basis of age and gender. So it's interesting, this campaign has really brought all the isms that we often write about, ageism, sexism, and racism, again to the forefront because we have such unusual and diverse candidates.
You mentioned the vice presidential slot there, and I saw an article this morning in the New York Times that there are three hopefuls, as the Times put it, who are stepping up. They've been invited to meet with John McCain at his ranch. And Governor Crist, is it, from Florida?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Governor Jindal of Louisiana and Mitt Romney are the three that are being named at this point. But there's a question, as you say, that is going to be the most important one he's going to have to answer because he's got a whole variety of factors to take into consideration. Could you talk for a few moments about what he is thinking? We've mentioned age a bit to balance things out, but there's more than just that.
Yes, and it works on both sides of the aisle. For example, you know, you think of a campaign as bifurcated, foreign policy issues and domestic policy issues. And then you start thinking about the match and the strengths of the presidential candidates. So that's why, for example, Obama, who's very strong in domestic, would probably choose a VP who's got the security side that balances out the domestic and foreign. Conversely, McCain, who's strong in security and foreign policy, needs somebody that's very strong in domestic policies. So that's probably the kind of person that he's going to be looking for to balance out his ticket.
And it should be some interesting conversations in Sedona this weekend, I would think.
Well, it's quite interesting, too, that the three names on the list are all governors or former governors.
Mm-hmm. What does
that
tell you?
Which have a wide experience with, you know, a wide range of domestic policies and can articulate anything from education to the environment to, you know, infrastructure and road construction.
We're talking about the campaign of John McCain as he runs for the White House over the course of the summer and into the fall. Talking about where the campaign is right now, some of the issues that are being talked about, and what they're going to be looking forward to as they head into the fall. Susan McManus is our guest. She is a professor of political science at the University of South Florida, and we'll be continuing to take your calls. We'll be taking a break here in a moment, but if you'd like to join in, it is 800-642-1234 in Madison. It is 263-1890. You can also join us by email, and that address is talk@WPR.org. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm in for Joy Cardine today. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 12 minutes before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 8 o'clock, though more older workers are employed today than ever before, ageist language is still common, and we'll be talking about the damaging effect on companies and working seniors after 8 o'clock. This hour, we are talking about the campaign of John McCain as he runs for the White House. Susan McManus is our guest, a professor of political science at the University of South Florida, and we've been talking about a number of issues, and in fact, we were just talking a little bit about ageism. Let's head to Langlade County right now, and Mike joins us. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. I understand that we still have in November an electoral system where each state is winner-take-all? Whoever gets the popular vote gets all the electoral votes from that state? And if so, seeing as how the Republicans have so muddled up everything they've touched in the last 7.5 years, is there any possibility at all that McCain will tilt some previously Democratic states into the Republican Party?
All right, Mike, thanks for the call. Two parts there. Susan McManus, I don't think there have been any changes in the Electoral College. But
there are some states, handful, where it's done on a proportional basis, but a very few. Most states are winner-take-all, but a handful are not.
Now, to the rest of his question, though, which states are likely to go for McCain that are going to be sort of in play, swing states, I guess?
Well, of course, that changes as the dynamics of the campaign change, but some of the states that right now McCain campaign feels that they have a good shot at winning would be states like, or flipping, as we say, changing from Democrat to Republican, would be New Jersey's, a lot of the sort of industrial states which have a high incidence of blue-collar workers where Hillary Clinton has done quite well. But there's only a few states on either side of the aisle that the campaigns feel like they can flip. And those, of course, are what we refer to as the consummate battleground states where the bulk of the candidate visits and a lot of the money will go.
And speaking of money, we mentioned this early on in the hour. One of John McCain's jobs that he's been working on for the past few months, while Democrats have been more visible, has been fundraising. And if Senator Obama becomes the nominee, he's been doing just raising all sorts of money. How has Senator McCain been doing, and what will his challenges be as he heads into the full election season?
He's not doing well compared to Hillary Clinton and Obama. In fact, he's, I think, gotten a little over $100 million compared to their, both of them are in the $200-plus million in terms of fundraising. But what he will have is money being spent by the party, and there have been some stories out today on precisely that point that it looks like the Republican Party itself will be able to help him out, particularly they're doing pretty well comparatively. But the key question is, will McCain, go for public financing? And if so, will Obama disdain that? Because in the past, Obama said he is in favor of public financing. And if they both agree to that, of course, that limits the amount of contributions that they can take in. But the key there is always the 527s, the outside independent advocacy groups, who can spend in an unlimited fashion. It just can't be coordinated with the campaign officially.
Mm-hmm. So that's something to keep an eye on.
Right.
Let's go to Sheboygan right now. Emily is with us. Good morning, Emily.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a comment concerning the age of John McCain. I read a statistic the other day that 91% of the population in America is younger than John McCain.
91? Okay.
91%. And I was just wondering, how that would make him able to relate to the general public. And also, I know he's 72. It's not extremely old, but as people age, they lose a lot of mental capacity. There's, dementia, and that I think that would really affect a presidency.
All right, Emily, thanks for the call. A couple of points there. And Susan McManus, I don't know that John McCain has shown any signs of slowing down, really, in any capacity.
No, and again, he always points to his excellent lineage. His mom's 92 and very active. But your caller does reflect, there's going to be a concern about ageism, and not so much because of dementia, but the health issue and the fact that McCain has had that melanoma, the cancer connection, which is, I think, the more interesting aspect of ageism is the connection with health. And younger people tend to think of health in terms of the mental differential, and I think older people more along the lines of the cancer, the heart, the actual physical ailments. But we will see age as an issue. And as I said earlier, This is a very, very interesting campaign. Ageism, racism, sexism. I guess the only thing mentioned that hasn't been mentioned is communism, and maybe that'll come in there too. I don't know, but the isms are definitely present in this election.
And Emily also brought up the whole issue of how can somebody who is that age, you know, relate to people who are younger. And what is your sense of how John McCain relates to, I mean, he's been relating to people, you know, in a very public way for a long, long time. Has the way he relates to people changed during his career?
He's had a very good way of connecting with, you know, he has relatively young children. He has young staff. I think you do that by the people that you have around you, and that's very important in campaigns. You notice he's very careful never to have any kind of backdrop where there's just one age group. But to go back to the broader point, do we have to assume that someone can't connect with someone if they're not of the same race or same age or same gender? That's a very dangerous hypothesis to offer up, that people can only be representative and connect if they share those kinds of physical attributes.
We're talking about the campaign of John McCain as we head into the summer and then into the fall. We'll take another call here and head up to Shawano. And Doris is with us. Good morning, Doris.
Good morning. I just want to reinforce that McCain is a wonderful presidential candidate. At 72, he's going strong. And I don't think that is a high age. I'm 85, and I'm going good. He has ability to work with bipartisan, which is what we really need in Washington. He will not support all of Bush's ideas, but he has the experience to know what is best for our country, and his experience really counts for him. The only problem is he doesn't have his own millions to donate like some of our Democrat candidates.
All right, Doris, thanks for the call. And Susan McManus, there's one vote who says age shouldn't make a difference. And Doris cites his bipartisanship, his experience. And I don't know, if John McCain's not exactly poverty-stricken, though, or at least his wife isn't.
Well, there again we go. It's very interesting. In the last couple of presidential campaigns, it's been the wives or the spouses that have had the big bucks. Look at Theresa Hines Gary, for example. But, you know, I think that your caller really does reflect what we started talking about initially, and that is that people, older voters, look at the experience issue as a very dominant one, having lived through some very tumultuous periods in American history. And that's one of the appeals of John McCain. And he has also an appeal with the fact that he has sacrificed himself for America. And let's never lose sight of the fact that patriotism is always something people want to see in their candidates. And I noticed yesterday and the day before in Obama's speeches have suddenly started emphasizing patriotism a little bit more, because Americans want to feel like their candidates are very patriotic.
And basically all John McCain has to do is sort of just show up. I mean, it's just part of him.
That's true, and that's why they started some of his earlier campaign was to reintroduce his biography to the country, which is a very common strategy in campaigning, that's the start point. And his, of course, is a very interesting biography that does resonate with a lot of Americans. You notice that both Democratic candidates are always very careful to say that he's an American hero, and then go into criticizing some of his policies, but never to denigrate that portion of his biography.
Well, as the McCain campaign heads into the summer, he's got a couple of big jobs, the vice presidential slot, of course, and then pretty soon he is going to have a single nominee on the Democratic side to run against. What sorts of things should we be watching for in the next month or so from the McCain campaign?
Language and how they frame Obama as a in the experience venue, and how they try to distinguish their policy positions from those of the Bush administration. I think those are the two things, the branding of Obama and the separation of McCain from Bush.
And it'll be a tricky line to walk, I think, on both counts.
Yes.
Susan McManus, thank you for joining us this morning.
My pleasure, and greetings from Florida. Y'all come vacation down here. We need your sales tax revenue.
Okay. Well, if we can afford the gas, we'll be right down there.
There you go. Thank you very much for having me as a guest.
You bet. Susan McManus has been with us, a professor of political science at the University of South Florida. And for the past hour or so, we have been talking about John McCain and his race for the White House. Yesterday at this time, we were talking about the Democratic primaries, where they were standing. And so today, a good day to focus on what is happening on the Republican side of things. If you'd like a copy of the program, you can call the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program 522B. You can also listen to our program archives. You'll find them online at our website. It's WPR.org. And then just go to the top of the page and you'll see a little link that says Listen. So click on Listen. You'll find the archives and the program you want. The producer for this program was Karen Pranger. And we had on-air production this hour from Michelle Kofel. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'm filling in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.